Rhoda Jones, great comedian, great boobs.
With thanks to Baileys, this is the Women's Prize for Fiction podcast, celebrating women's writing, sharing our creativity, our voices, and our perspectives, all while championing the very best fiction written by women around the world. I'm Vic Hope, and I am your host for season 7 of Bookshelfie, the podcast that asks women with lives as inspiring as any fiction to share the 5 books by women that have shaped them. Join me and my incredible guests as we talk about the books you'll be adding to your 2024 reading list.
Welcome to a very special recording of Bookshelfie tonight. We have a live audience. I am like, there's one, no, 2 men in the room. You're welcome. It is fine.
Get out.
In front of some wonderful women. And we are coming to you live from the Diageo headquarters, home of our lovely sponsors, Baileys. And here's how it works. I've got an incredible guest who is going to tell me the story of her life through the books that have shaped her. If you listen to Bookshelfie, it is the most gorgeous chat. I take something away from every single episode. I feel so honoured to get to have these chats. And Rosie and I were just saying, how sophisticated of a Tuesday evening. We're sitting here having some non-alcoholic cocktails, talking about books. So let's have a good one. And I would love to introduce my guest now tonight. I am joined by comedian, actor, and author Rosie Jones. Rosie is incredible. She's a must-see act on the UK comedy circuit, having fronted 2 travelogue series of her own for Channel 4, Mission Accessible and Trip Hazard. Rosie can also be seen on countless hit television shows, including Live at the Apollo, The Jonathan Ross Show, 8 out of 10 Cats, Cats Does Countdown, and The Last Leg, to name just a few. And I do have to give an admirable shout out to The Last Leg during the Paralympics of 2021 in Tokyo, where Rosie and I were both working, and on night one, we found the beer fridge.
Me and Vic were the legends of Tokyo, and it was such a surreal time because I didn't have a crowd or anything. All they had was Vic being her incredible talented self-presenting and me yelling like an absolute maniac. We both have our strengths.
Yeah, we do. And we were utilised, I feel, fully. You were the official Team GB cheerleader of the Tokyo 2020 Paralympics. Though known primarily for her comedy appearances and stand-up, Rosie is also an established writer and actor. Having written on hit Netflix series Sex Education, she also both wrote and starred in Disability Benefits, which was commissioned by Channel 4 as part of their 2022 Comedy Blaps collection. 2022 also saw the release of Rosie's second children's book, The Amazing Edie Eckhart, The Big Trip, published by Hachette Children's Group, which tells the story of a little girl with cerebral palsy. Please join me in giving a very warm welcome to Rosie Jones. Rosie, before we started, before we began recording, you were telling me about how picking the 5 books that have shaped you, that the prism through which you would like to see the world tonight, was therapeutic for you.
Yeah, because I really took it seriously and I didn't want to just pick the last 5 books I read or the 5 books that I enjoyed. I really wanted 5 books that I felt have shaped me, had changed me, have made me feel things that I did not necessarily like at the time, because book to do that to you, and I feel like as soon as I see your book cover, I'm taken back to a place of a time of an emotion. So yeah, unlike a lot of things in my life, I have taken this very seriously.
I feel very honoured, actually. Yeah. It's one of the things we're taking seriously.
Yeah. The only thing
ever.
There are books on this list, one in particular, and I feel exactly the same as you about it. I won't give a spoiler away just yet because we'll get to it, but I don't like it. I don't think I like it. But I needed it. It's important.
And we'll get to that book later. But I think that book in particular, I could confidently say to the author, I hated it. And knowing her and reading about her, she would say, good. Because that's what she wanted. She wanted to convey a certain emotion, and she absolutely did that. Oh, I love how we're at the beginning and we're already creating mystery.
It's another cliffhanger, right?
Tune
in! And that's the end of that one, back to the next one. But it's that encouraging you to interrogate feelings that we're supposed to have.
Yeah.
Have you always taken that from reading? I mean, have you always even been a big reader? Do you remember as a child, were you into books?
Yeah, and I mean, I can't believe it taken me 3 minutes to mention that I am cerebral palsy. The disability is better if you're singing. And growing up with cerebral palsy, I couldn't walk. I was very different to people, children my age, but something that I absolutely nailed was reading. And I remember from being about 6 years older up until I left home at 18, I would go to bed every night and read for 1 hour, and that turned into 2 and 3, and I would just consume book after book, and it made me who I am, but it also made me angry because the hundreds of books I read, I never found a character that I connected with. I remember my first vague sense of disability representation in a children's book wasn't bloody calling from the secret garden. And I was said, well, I'm not a sickly kid in the garden.
Victorian times.
Yeah. I love this one. And I didn't like that because I hated how disability was always represented as something vulnerable or a victim, because that was never me. So through reading, I feel like it ignited a fire in me to go, right, now I'll grow up, I'll become a writer, and I'll tell stories about real disabled people who aren't victims, who are great and funny and ambitious and flawed, and I'm proud to say I've done that and I'll carry on doing that.
So for every little girl who's in their bedroom at night, getting lost in a book, who now reads about Edie, what would you say to them about what they can be?
I'd first say you're not alone, because I had a very happy childhood, incredible parents, but it was lonely. And I think if you compare disability to every other minority, if you're a woman, you grow up with other women in your life, same as if you're not white. If you are queer, you have your queer family, you have your queer spaces. But if you're disabled, you don't have that. You don't have your family. I was the first person in my family who was disabled, and therefore it's lonely. You're kind of mapping out your own story as it comes. So to any girl, boy at home reading Edie, at first and say, you're not alone, your Auntie Rose is here, paving the way for you. And I'd also say, you can be whatever you want to be, even if you can't see it. It feels scary, but make it for other people.
It's something so powerful that you can now provide the pages and the words for a little girl, little boy in their bedroom to get lost in the same way that you got lost in books. And that book will shape them. And I'd love to get into now the books that have shaped you.
Oh, that was a lovely thing. Oh, you are good.
Thank you very much, Rosie Jones. Your first book, Shelby Boob Rosie, is The Colour Purple by Alice Walker. For those of you listening who can't see, Rosie just clutched her pearls, then pumped her fist in the air. Set in the deep American South between the wars, The Colour Purple is the classic tale of Celie, a young black girl born into poverty and segregation, raped repeatedly by the man she calls father. She has two children taken away from her. She's separated from her beloved sister Nettie, and she's trapped into an ugly marriage. But then she meets the glamorous Shug Avery. You love it. Singer and magic maker, a woman who has taken charge of her own destiny. Gradually, Celie discovers the power and joy of her own spirit, freeing her from her past and reuniting her with those she loves. Now, Rose, you said that this was the first book that affected you and made you feel things you had never felt before. What were those feelings?
It was the first book that I consumed feeling like an adult. It had incredibly mature and adult themes, and I really felt like it was the first time that I really understood them. And I felt them, and more on that wood and history level. I was a little white disabled girl from a shit town in Yorkshire. And I feel like this was my first experience of really finding out about America and that history.
You've also said that this was a bit of a sexual awakening for you.
Yeah. So I remember, as I said, I read it at school. But surprised you to know that I was a geek. And I remember we were all given our own copy of The Colour Purple, and I was like, don't worry about it, because I'd already gone to the bookshop and bought my own 25th year anniversary edition, because A, I wanted to make notes on the pages, but I also wanted to read it several times at home. I think I read it 10 times in 3 months. I got an A for A level, don't worry about it. And so it was one time reading it at home that I really connected to the character of Shug and see how she'd been in this horrendous marriage, and suddenly there was this glamorous woman in her life, and I, oh my god, too much information. But there's a part in the book where Celie looks at her vulva.
She calls it the little button.
Yeah. She looks at her vulva in the mirror, and it's just incredibly just awakening moment for her, and alongside it was a sexual awakening for me and my own body. And even on the pages, Shug is sexy.
She is.
So it was one of the first times I remember reading something and being like, what's that? What's that? I'm not quite sure why I like that, but I do. Cutting gay.
How much time elapsed before you realised why it was that you liked that?
Oh, so sad. No, it didn't come out till I was 27, because when you grow up in Yorkshire, being disabled, you're kind of busy. I was honestly so busy going, can I go to uni? Can I get a job? Can I go to London? Can I live independently? Can I be like everybody else? Literally, the question, who do I want to shag? was so fabulous.
Which is such a shame.
I mean, that woman, I occupied myself with a mirror. So yeah, it wasn't only coming out at 27 that I did go back and those instances reading books, reading about Shug, watching Rachel Green on Friends and really enjoying them tops. it was only then at 27 when I was so comfortable in myself that I went, okay, let's go out and let's kiss some girls.
The way you just ran through those questions that you were asking yourself at that stage of your life as an adolescent, who do I want to be? Can I live independently? Can I get a job? These are questions that I feel are really reflected in this book, that you know, Celia is asking herself, that Shug is asking of Celia. And what Shug does is she shows her the beauty in herself and the beauty in the world around her. Celia gets to see that. She gets to realise her power, step into her light. And it's so interesting that you said you read it over and over again, because same here, every time I read that book, I take something else from it. And the beauty in the world around is something that I find so potent. Alice Walker suggests that perhaps God is nature. Perhaps God is the universe. Perhaps God is a tree saying, look at me, I'm beautiful. So appreciate for a second. What do you see as beautiful in the world around you? Did you take anything from it that made you look just a little bit differently, not only at yourself, but also when you looked around?
Yeah, it's so hard for me because I don't want to say about like Celia, because in many ways our lives could not be more different. But I did relate to her because on paper she had an awful life. But the fact that as a character, she could still see the beauty in it all is something that I absolutely related to, and I still do. And I think for me being disabled, I'd be lagging if I didn't wake up some days when I felt particularly tired, when my legs were aching because I'd bloody fallen over yet again. And I'd be lying if I didn't say, I wish I was non-disabled. I wish I was just like everyone else. I wish I was, in quotation marks, normal. But I think just stepping back, validating those feelings, but at the same time going, no, look what you do have. Look at the life you have built due to the choices that you have made, that the friends that you've collected and curated. And sometimes it's hard. It's hard in this world that as soon as you turn on a news channel, it looks like the entire world on fire, but I think for everyone it's such a great exercise to step back and go, here's a beautiful things in my life.
And to laugh.
Yeah.
Talk to me about comedy. Why comedy?
Because I'm just so funny.
Who has written for screen, who has written novels, and who writes stand-up.
Yes.
Talk to me about the difference between all of these different mediums.
Oh, it's honestly the greatest love of my life. And I think growing up, being different, having people feel awkward around me, feeling a lot of tension when I walked into a room, I learned that I could use comedy as my defence mechanism. And it's such an amazing thing to see, to crack a joke and see a person in real time go, oh, she's all right, I like her, she can stay. And I think as I grew, comedy grew with me, and it's always bitter at that defence mechanism, but at the same time, right now, we are in need of a good laugh.
Yes.
I love a chuckle, and the fact that I can make somebody's life or day a little bit brighter by giving them a quick joke is everything. And I'm very greedy, and I love the fact that I can use comedy in my stand-up, in my books, in my scripts. They're all so different.
Yeah.
But the fact that I can give them that ounce of joy in whatever form they want, even podcasts, is everything.
Exactly. Here we are. And we move now on to your second book, Shelby Book. So we've gone from the first book that made you feel something to the most recent book that you've read. And it's The List by Yomi Adeyoke. Ola Jide is a high-profile journalist. She's marrying the love of her life in 1 month's time. That is until one morning when they both wake up to the same message about The List. Now, it began as a list of anonymous allegations about abuse of men, but now it's been published online. Ola made her name breaking exactly this type of story, except today, Michael's name, her man, is on there. With their future on the line, Ola gives Michael an ultimatum to prove his innocence by their wedding day, but will the truth of what happened change everything for both of them? What were your immediate thoughts, feelings after finishing this?
Oh, I loved it. I finished it about 3 weeks ago now, and it is so interesting and quite uncomfortable at times, and it really made me think about my place in the world, in the media, as a woman coming across misogyny, sexism in the workplace. But as well as that, what I found fascinating was the idea of, is there such a thing as one truth, and what happens when one thing happens but two people have very different experiences of how that event made them feel. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's about cancel culture as well, which gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the dangers of media, of the social media in this modern age that we live in?
Very interesting, because I feel like I can talk about it as a woman, but also as someone in the media. And firstly, as someone in the media, rightly or wrongly, I think rightly, I am on high alert everywhere. So I'm not on Twitter anymore, but when I was, I would write a tweet and I would read it back like 20 times and I would make sure that I wasn't offending anyone that I didn't want to offend. If you told me, didn't give a shit.
That second guessing and that higher lure that you just mentioned has been exhausting when you feel like you have this responsibility because of your platform and, you know, others in the past have exploited the power that's been afforded to them by that platform. We know in the comedy world and in many other industries as well. And on top of all of that, because nuance is so lost online, it can feel deranged out there, right? And I know that there is a lot of trolling, there's a lot of abuse. You just mentioned you came off Twitter. How do you protect your energy? How do you look after yourself? How do you deal with it?
Therapy!
I'm going to join
you.
Therapy!
Can't
preach enough about therapy!
Yeah, so I did a documentary last year on Channel 4 about trolling, online abuse, ableism, and it was actually that production company that said we are going to be delving into very hard topics. Let us help you with the ableism. I think I had the reaction of a lot of people out there who initially went, why, no, I'm alright, I'm strong. But then going into it, I really found the joy of therapy and talking, and I realised that especially my relationship with social media was making me increasingly more anxious. And I think every comedian gets abused online because comedy, by its nature of it, is subjective. There are so many people out there who don't find me funny, and that's okay. I mean, they are wrong. But that is okay. But then when you're a female comedian, you get more abuse when you're a female disabled comedian. Christ alive! So I have people, especially on Twitter, every day making comments about what I look like, what I sound like, my comedy, every movement, every word I say. And if I read every single one of them, over time I feel like that would have been incredibly damaging, because I would start to take it on, and I think, like everybody out there, I have dark days, I have negative thoughts about myself, and it's horrendous to think that my deepest worry about myself, that I could go online and have a stranger going, yeah, you're right. So, through therapy, I have learned to A, not take that on board, but B, also have an incredibly healthy relationship to social media.
Baileys is proudly supporting the Women's Prize for Fiction by helping showcase incredible writing by remarkable women, celebrating their accomplishments and getting more of their books into the hands of more people. Baileys is the perfect adult treat, whether shaken in a cocktail, over ice cream, or paired with your favourite book. Check out baileys.com for our favourite Baileys recipes.
We've talked about how books provide us with this space to walk a day in the shoes of someone else, create empathy, there's therapy there for us. And to an extent, I think nowhere is that more true than in this next book we're going to talk about, which... Cliffhanger. Here we are. Is a Little Lies.
Yes.
By Hanya Yanagihara. Which we're not sure we like. When four graduates from a small Massachusetts college, Willem, JB, Malcolm and Jude, move to New York to make their way, they are broke, they're adrift, and buoyed only by their friendship and ambition. Over the decades, their relationships deepen and they darken, and they're tinged by addiction, success and pride, yet their greatest challenge is Jude himself. By midlife, he is an increasingly broken man, his mind and body scarred by an unspeakable childhood and haunted by a trauma he fears will define his life forever. Now, you said you're unsure if you like this book, but you've picked it. Why is that?
I think, like my teacher at the beginning, literature, books for me is art. And you might not love every piece, but if a book makes you think or feel, for me, that is a good book. And I actually read A Little Life when I was on holiday alone in Greece. In hindsight, was that a good idea? No.
And it's a big book. You're not fitting any others in your bag. It's too heavy. You'll be over your 20 kilograms.
I am my suitcase full of bikinis and A Little Life, and that's it. And I really have let it sit with me, and I have thought about it every day since. And I think in hindsight, yeah, I did a little bit. And as I said, I hated it at times. But I needed it. I needed to read it. And I think even though it is the probably the most tragic story I've ever read, it still has moments of joy and happiness. And it's back to what we were saying of, even in our darkest of times, when we're in our darkest of places, there is a light to be found.
I very similarly read this on holidays in Nigeria with my family. And actually, 3 out of 5 books you've picked, Rosie, a books that I've cried on planes to. So thanks for that. This one, I was wailing. I wasn't just crying, I was wailing. And the man next to me went, "I'm sure it's a lovely story, but can you please be quiet?" But you're right, it is devastating. I was angry with Nia Yanagihara for quite a while because I was like, this is so emotionally manipulating. You're taking by the scruff of my neck and pulling me through this, and I can't handle it. But at the centre of it is friendship, yeah? At the centre of this book, as well as trauma, there is this big love story between Jude and Willem. And while it's not just a book about gay relationships, because that would be very reductive to say that, it is a love story.
Yeah.
It's about friendship. Yeah. How much were the complex relationships part of the joy that you took from it, part of why you loved it?
Yeah, that's it. It was a love story that really came at a perfect place in the book when you feel like all is lost for the characters. They have this really authentic friendship love that becomes romantic. But also, I think my favourite character in it all was JB and just his relationship to addiction and how he basically burns his friendship with the boys, but how he, through love, tries to come back and repair it. And I just think that is kind of the answer to life, really. And we'll come back to it in a later book choice. But it's about all kinds of love, and even in the most horrendous of times, if you've got a friend or a lover you can lean on, that is a joy to be had in life.
You're talking about JB there.
Yeah.
I'm really happy you did, because you're right. This book is about all the different barriers and obstacles and challenges we face in this little life that we're all just trying to live. We're all just trying to get by and avoid the potholes as much as possible. And I actually read that you've commented before that the barriers that you face in comedy aren't necessarily around being gay or disabled, but above all else, the fact that you are a woman.
Yeah. Bullshit. And I remember Ironies that a comedy in 2017, so we were only talking 7 years ago, but I would regularly enter green rooms where I would be the only woman on a comedy lineup, I remember one particular night where I came into the green room, said hello to four male comedians who glanced at me, didn't say hello, and then went back to the conversation.
It's just rude.
Yeah. And then I just kept myself to myself. I went on stage and naturally I nailed it. I was so funny. I had a great one, and I came back in the green room and they were four different men. They were like, all right, how long have you been doing comedy? And at the time, I felt relieved that they were talking to me. But in hindsight, it's like, fuck you. I really don't think if I would be man, they would wait for me to go out there and prove myself and prove me to be worthy of them speaking to me.
You've got a brand new show, actually, Out of Order, with co-hosts Catherine Ryan and Judy Love, who are both so excellent.
Yeah.
It is insane that it should even feel like a big deal to have three female comedians. You shouldn't even have to say female comedians.
Yeah.
Three comedians. But what was that dynamic like, and what does that mean to have that lineup?
Incredible. And I think when we were doing promo for it, everybody kept saying, all female comedy show. And I'm glad they did, because it was the first comedy show where the host and the two team captains were all women. And of course we should celebrate that, but at the same time, it was nothing to do with being a woman. And Comedy Central got me on board as a host. And they were brilliant. They were like, we want you to choose a team captains. And I didn't specifically choose two women. I chose Catherine and Judy because regardless of gender, they are two of the best comedians working in the country right now.
Yes.
Regardless of what's in their knickers. But then at the same time, when we were filming, because me, Catherine and Judy were the regulars, we kind of set the tone. And the concept of Out of Order is what it says on the tin. We had Rose's regulars and we had to order them according to a question, whether that was who's been fired the most times or who's had the most one night stands. And I think if that concept had been done 10 years ago with a very different host, that one probably male. There is so much of an opportunity to mock and to belittle those people and to make them the butt of the joke. And that wasn't a babe at all. I remember that exact one who's had the most one-night stands. The one with the most was an amazing 70-year-old woman.
She's been around long enough.
But she had 3,000 one-night stands, and when I revealed that, she said, actually, 3,002, because last night I had a threesome. And I just think, like I said 10 years ago, in the other hands, that woman would have been ridiculed.
Yeah.
But with me, Catherine and Judith, we made comedy from it, but always with the notion of, yeah, you did. You do you. That's amazing. And I mean, I could talk about comedy and tone and intention and what you can say, what you can't say all bloody day long. But I think it always comes back to where is that comedy coming from? Is it coming from a good place, or is it coming from a place of mockery and ridicule? And if it's coming from the latter, goodbye, I'm not bothered with that. Can we give a look that frankly lazy attempt at comedy in the 90s? I'm all for lifting, celebrating, embracing everybody and bringing them all along for the party.
It's just like this podcast. It's about owning our own voices, owning our stories and uplifting the stories and voices of other women. And I will be tuning in, Rosie, onto another plane crier. Yeah, it's your fourth bookshelving book, which is Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. She's clutching her pearls again. For years, rumours of the Marsh Girl have haunted Berkeley Cove, a quiet town in the North Carolina coast. So in late 1969, when handsome Chase Andrews is found dead, the locals immediately suspect Kaya Clark, the so-called Marsh Girl. But Kaya is not what they say. Sensitive and intelligent, she survived for years alone in the marsh that she calls home, finding friends in the gulls and lessons in the sand. Then the time comes when she yearns to be touched and loved. When two young men from town become intrigued by her wild beauty, Kaya opens herself to a new life until the unthinkable happens. Okay, so let's get into this. Even thinking about the main character, Kaya, it makes your heart hurt. You've got your head in your hands.
Yeah.
What was it about her that had such a lasting impact on you?
It's interesting, and I wrote this, and like I said, I thought about this a lot, but it's only hearing you read them out together, I'm like, I'm a sucker from a lonely girl. I don't know what that says about me. but I really, again, related to Kaya and just how misunderstood she is by the town. And I just, yeah, I love her and I think I try to talk about a lot. I think people would look at Kaya and pity her or see her as a monster or somebody they should fear. And that's not that character at all. And I think there's been times in my life that people have misunderstood me and pitied me or feared me in a way that they didn't know how to interact with me. And it's reading a book like Where the Crawdads Sing made me go, oh, how about we just all have a conversation with each other before jumping to assumptions?
You talked about loneliness at the very beginning of our chat, about growing up and feeling lonely, not necessarily finding that family, finding that tribe that it felt like everyone else was finding. And Rosie, you've gone into a career that I know from knowing a lot of comedians can be very lonely. How do you find being on the road, stand-up comedy, and the loneliness that comes with that?
Yeah, well, sounding like my it is lonely, and yeah, if not chosen the right career for it, but I think you do find your people, and I said before that you've, I feel like you not only find friends, you curate your friends.
It's really nice.
And I'm really conscious of that. And especially moving in my 30s, and as I get busier, as my friends who get married had children, it's no longer a case of running into your pal in the pub. You have got to make a conscious choice and effort to stay in their life and lay in yours. And I'm lucky in that aspect of having great friends, a great family. So when I'm on the road, a lot of the time I have pockets, I have days off, and I fill them with friends or people. But at the same time, you won't believe me, you'll laugh at me, but it's growing up that I've really understood myself, and I do a trait of being an introvert in that I love people, but I do find it draining. And that idea of going back at the end of the day to an empty house, to my favourite takeaway, to my favourite TV show, to a new book in bed, That's what brings me joy and that's what fills me up. So it's that balance between making time for friends and family to cure that loneliness, but at the same time, releasing yourself from any guilt. I had it on Saturday. It was my first day off in 6 weeks and I went, oh, I should see them. Oh, I haven't seen them for ages. And then I went, wait, what do I want to?
I don't really want to see them.
No, and I didn't. And I got a tiny takeaway. I bought a watch on and I read an entire book in one sitting. And it was the greatest day.
I saw quite a few heads nodding in the audience when you talked about curating your friendships, because as we get older, it is the quality over the quantity of friends. And this is a book, yes, about loneliness and the importance of human connection, but also loneliness is not the same as solitude. The power of solitude. You can be on your own and feel amazing. You know, Kaya loves being around the gulls and the insects and the nature. And for me personally, I read this book at a time when I realised that I could be amazing on my own.
Yeah.
And I lent into those things. I lent into the nature around me.
Yeah.
I felt good.
Yeah. And again, I probably can't say it without crying, but one of the most powerful part of the book for me at the beginning when Kai is a child and first of all humble leaves and then one by one her brothers and sisters leave and she's left daddy's child caring for her dad. And then he leaves and she's there on her own. And it was interesting that I didn't feel sorry for her. She, even from a child, had a power to survive. And I think that is the greatest thing about life in that if you face adversity, the ideal situation is that you have friends, family, a partner there to help you through it, but worst case scenario, you are strong enough to face it on your own.
That resilience is a form of self-love. We've talked about the love of friends, family, romantic love, but at the end of the day, it comes down to loving yourself.
Yeah.
And with that, it is time to talk about your fifth and final bookshelfy pick tonight, which is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. She's doing the gun fingers, rap rap to this. Aging and reclusive Hollywood movie icon Evelyn Hugo is finally ready to tell the truth about her glamorous and scandalous life. But when she chooses unknown magazine reporter Monique Grant for the job, no one is more astounded than Monique herself. Why her? Why now? But as Monique begins to feel a very real connection to the legendary star, as Evelyn's story nears its conclusion, it becomes clear that her life intersects with Monique's own in tragic and irreversible ways. Now, we keep coming back to this, but you've described this book as showing love in all its forms. What do you know? Love is at the bottom of everything. And it obviously details seven marriages, but they're not all what you might expect, right?
Right. First I need to apologize to my family because I picked this book up on Christmas Day morning. And then I was like, oh no. And then I don't think I should write to my family all day. I just read it in its entirety and I loved it. It had everything that I need from a good story, that idea of old Hollywood, that idea of then she never so sing for me as the love of your life, or one singular place you go for love. It comes in so many different forms. And yeah, she gets married 7 times, but not, they're not the love of her life. And I feel like, yeah, but I don't want to give it away. There is obviously one romantic love of her life. But even that, I didn't come away thinking about that. I came away thinking about friendship. And the man that is by her side, her companion.
There's a theme of legacy in this as well, and what we leave behind to the world, how we're perceived, how we're remembered.
Yeah.
How would you like to be remembered, Rosie?
Rosie James, great comedian, great boobs. Really good pair.
What has been said, so I mean, that's it, immortalised. That's it. Amongst other things as well. I mean,
I think seriously. I think for me it comes back to joy, and if when I get people say, oh, I like Rosie, she made me happy, she made me giggle, she made me happy to be here. Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
I think that's already happening. I think it's been happening for time.
Great, I can die now.
And your idiot club books, they are, we know, making a huge impact on young readers and on their perception of life with cerebral palsy. What would you like to do next with your writing? Where would you like it to take you? What would you like to leave in the world in terms of writing?
500 books.
Great.
Done. I bet they got about 496. Now I definitely want to continue writing my indie books, writing more books for children. But moving on, I want to write books for adults, and I don't feel old enough and right now. I wouldn't want to write a memoir or something like that, but I do want to step into that world and write about disability and what it's like being disabled in the world, in the country right now. So I'll absolutely continue doing my stand up, doing my telly, doing my acting, but I definitely see my role as a writer and as an author only getting bigger.
I love that there is so much more life to live, there's more love to be felt, there's more joy to be found, which is what has come up over and over again in your picks today. So I know this is going to be a tough question, but just finally, if you did have to choose one book from your list as a favourite, Rosie, which would it be and why?
I think because I can read it over and over. I'd say The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo because, yeah, for me, it encapsulated love in all its forms.
I think that's the perfect way to wrap things up. Rosie Jones, thank you so much. I always love our conversations, and I love this one particularly. Thank you so much, everyone. Show me appreciation for me.
I'm Vic Hope, and you've been listening to the Women's Prize for Fiction podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Baileys and produced by Birdline Media. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.